Envy the guy that sings that song because we just have to work on Friday. Oh, well. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Boy, what a freak show going on in Washington, huh? We have some sound for you tonight from the CPAC convention. I don't know, man. That is, you talk about a madhouse, absolute rubber bungalow. When Bob Barr gets booed... It's pretty weird. When I watch some of the clips from this this cluster fork that's going on in Washington, I mean, wow, man, this is really comedy of the darkest, most twisted kind. You have the Mopsy twins up there, the Cheney twins, Dick. And is it Liz, Dick and Liz? Remember Dick and Liz when that used to mean Richard Burton and Liz Taylor? Anyway, there's Dick and Liz up there. They've got something going on, those two. I'm sorry, but maybe it's just all spiritual. But those two have something going on. They both love torture. They both want torture. They both have some sort of rictus going on in their facial muscles. I've never seen anything like those two. Huh? Anyway, we'll have all that for you tonight. Plus, Laura Flanders is coming on at 10 o'clock tonight. Go to lauraflanders.com and see how lucky we are to have her on. She and I worked together at Air America. And, of course, I've been following her stuff, her writings, all over the place. So... it's a real pleasure to have her on about an hour from now. Stick around, okay? Did you see this? Citi, C-I-T-I, Citicorp, Citi credit card holders, they have a surprise for you. They have a surprise for you. Citicorp has sent their cardholders letters notifying them that it will add a $60 annual fee to customer accounts effective April 1st. If the credit card holder does not charge at least $2,400 in purchases on their card yearly. Now, if you put $2,400 on your card in a year, then the $60 fee will be credited to your account. So they're going to penalize you now for not using the credit card. A Citi spokesman said the following, quote, "We understand that customers can be frustrated by new fees, especially in difficult economic times. However, we don't give a goddamn pay it or lose your..." No, I made that part up. He went on to say, "However, this action is necessary given the costs of doing business," end quote. The cost of doing business? Has something changed? Don't they still gouge the merchant? Don't they still gouge the cardholder? What cost of doing business has increased? Aren't they very, very, very tight and restrictive on their credit card requirements now for people who apply? What cost of doing business, you lying bastard? You're just greedy. That's all. Plus, you're trying to find creative ways to get more revenue because... Ta-da, ta-da, credit card reform legislation that goes into effect this month. There's a website, Lowcards, lowcards.com, and it's a website that tracks credit card trends and rates. And a spokesman for that website said other credit card issuers now may follow Citi and add a similar fee. So, I don't know how that, you know, okay, it's only $200 a month, right? But the idea, and this is the part that gets me, the CPAC zombies, the Night of the Living Dead is what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. These are zombies. These are people who just, no matter how many times you drive a stake through their brains, they just won't die. They keep coming back every year. But this is where they should be targeting their pissy little anger. But they can't. They're blinded by the fact there is a Negro person, a dark-skinned person, an African-American in the White House. So they're blinded by that's all they can see. We got to get our country back, they keep saying. Well, you know what they mean by that. For God's sake, you know what they mean. We got to get the country back from the colored man. That's all. But you see, if the teabaggers and the CPAC zombies and the rest of these right-wing freaks were even 1% of 1% serious about getting the country back and stopping the madness, they would focus on an announcement like this. But no, they make jokes about the poor guy who slammed his airplane into the IRS building in Austin yesterday and killed himself and someone else and sent 12 people to the hospital. That's where they find their humor. These are sick sons of bitches, in addition to being they were turned down for the cast of Night of the Living Dead 6 because it was just too real. These people are too real. They are real zombies. They really are. So we'll have some of that for you tonight. We've got some sound from that. But that's who they should be. They should be going after them. But no, they're going to talk about that son of a bitch Obama who tried to make sure everybody has health insurance. Well, that scum bastard. Let's get him out of office. Ha, 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 ha. You people are so stupid. You really are. You right-wingers are the dumbest clutch of freaks. In South Carolina, it just keeps coming out of South Carolina. It just never stops. How many South Carolina stories of freakoids have we done so far this year? And it's only February 19th. It seems like just a steady stream of them. Now there's a guy there, a representative in South Carolina named Mike Pitts, and he has introduced legislation in the South Carolina House that would mandate that gold and silver coins replace federal currency as legal tender in his state. That's right. He says, he doesn't want any of them old goddamn Federal Reserve notes floating around South Carolina anymore. You know, look at the money in your wallet. Everything, all the folding money says Federal Reserve note, right? And is it worthless? Of course it's worthless. Always has been worthless. It doesn't mean anything, but it's what we use, you see. It's what we use. But this creepoid, he wants to ban what he calls the unconstitutional substitution of Federal Reserve notes for silver and gold coin. In an interview, this freak, Mike Pitts, said that he believes, quote, if the federal government continues to spend money at the rate it's spending money, and if it continues to print money at the rate it's printing money, our economic system is going to collapse, end quote. Jesus, really, Mike? You figure that way. Well, bless your little pea-picking heart. Well, again, Mike, why don't you go after the people who have destroyed the economy? First of all, you got to go back to all the Republicans back in 1997 who did away with the Glass-Steagall Act and the president who signed it because he was a coward and a triangulator and he was busy with Monica. You got to go back to that. And then you've got to stop and think, well, when Monica's boyfriend did hand over the presidency to the Supreme Court, what he handed over was a budget surpluses as far as the eye could see into the future and a black budget surplus for the previous 2 years. And then your boy, George Bush and Dick Cheney, that's one person, stepped in and screwed it all. So you have a problem with the money, Mike Pitts, of South Carolina. There's a lot of people you can go see about that, but what do you want people to do? Carry a little bag of gold nuggets in their pocket so they go down to the 7-Eleven, get some bread and milk, have little scales there and weigh out a little bit of gold? How much is that? That'll be 0.29 ounces. Oh, damn. Here, let me... South Carolina, an absolute asylum.
He hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
If I haven't, you can read between the lines and the commas and the semicolons. 21 past the hour. Kentucky. A panel in Kentucky of educators, public educators, with quotes around the word educators, has approved Bible classes for public schools. That's in Texas and Kentucky. And a few other states. The Senate Education Committee yesterday in Kentucky unanimously approved legislation that would effectively return the Bible to classrooms across Kentucky. Now, listen to this hypocritical statement. This lying little rat bastard, a senator in Kentucky, Kentucky senator, And imagine how if Jesus really existed and Jesus really were omnipotent and had all this power, and Jesus would stride into the Kentucky legislature building, walk up to this guy, the Senator David Boswell, and Jesus would rip into open his mouth and reach in and rip his goddamn tongue out and stomp on it. You know that Jesus would do that because this is what this freak said, quote, "The purpose of this bill is to allow the Bible to be used for its literature content as well as its art and cultural and social studies content." End quote. All right. You want to get to the part? Let's go to the Song of Solomon. You want to do that? "Thy breasts are like doves." You want to get into that? You want to talk about the mound of Venus? Do you want to talk about the kisses that caress my eyes are like warm honey? Do you want to, there's some of the literature. Senator David, you lying little twit. So that's the only reason they want to put the Bible into Kentucky schools is for the literature content and the art. The art and the cultural and social studies content. The social studies content, that would be the part in the Bible that says, if your children sass you, I'm using a Kentucky term there, if your children sass you, take your daughter out in the backyard and cut her goddamn head off. Right. If your son sass you, take him out in the backyard and stick a knife through his heart. Kill him. Very simple. That's what you mean by social studies, Senator David? David Boswell, who introduced this, Senator says he believes the legislation is constitutional because, this is where Jesus would just stomp this guy's forehead in, because the Bible won't be taught from a religious perspective. It sure won't. We're going to look at the art and the poetry. We're going to look at the pictures. We're going to look at the cultural implications of the Bible, but no religion. No. This is the kind of legislation that most Kentucky lawmakers dare not vote against, especially in an election year. Because you know why? When they come up for re-election, he doesn't like God! He hates Jesus! He does! He tried to keep, he's like Madeline Murray O'Hare, kept Jesus out of the classroom. You're going to vote for an atheistic, agnostic, communist like him? Colleagues heaped praise on Senator David. They did. Amen. And fellow State Senator Julian Carroll, a Democrat from Frankfort, Kentucky, who helped explain the measure to members of the Education Committee. Senator Carroll, the Democrat, a former governor, assured lawmakers that passing the measure is the right thing to do, legally and morally. Here's what the Democrat said, quote, "We took the Bible out of our schools, but we put nothing back. When we took the Bible out of the schools, we also unfortunately took out that portion of the Bible which relates to life skills like welding and wheel making, value systems, and so our students these days do not have the full opportunity, in my judgment, to be taught those life skills and value judgments that keep them out of our penitentiaries." End quote. I kid you not. South Carolina, Kentucky, Georgia, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, not North Carolina, Louisiana, what else? What am I forgetting? Parts of Missouri and Southern Illinois. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus. Let's get these damn secular textbooks out of the schools and go back to teaching the Word of God. It makes it so much easier when you just explain to the children that, you know, the planet's only 8,000 years old and Adam and Eve used to ride dinosaurs. Yeehaw!
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
Boo. 25 before the hour. Conservatives, I love them. I really do. What the hell would we laugh at? Speaking of conservatives, the CPAC convention of 2010 is in full flower in Washington, D.C. And we have some sound for you. And just to make your Friday night, we want you to hear some of this. Dead Eye Dick Cheney showed up yesterday, an unscheduled appearance. Woo! Sort of a little treat for the early arrivals, right? And his daughter, Liz. There's something going on between those two. It's probably all spiritual. His daughter, Liz, gave her a nice little... gave him a nice little introduction. So here he is, Dick Cheney, fresh from his box of sacred dirt.
Knock it off. A welcome like that's almost enough to want to make me run for office again.
Good God.
But I'm not going to do it. As I look to the future now, I think the developments that we've seen over the last several months are enormously encouraging. I think when we can achieve the kind of results that we've achieved in places like Virginia and New Jersey and Massachusetts... the sky's the limit here. I think 2010 is going to be a phenomenal year for the conservative cause. And I think Barack Obama is a one-term president.
Yeah, well, I understand the rotten son of a bitch tried to give us all health insurance reform of some sort, and all he's done is continue some of the key policies of the Bush crime family. So, yeah, let's applaud.
Let me introduce my good friend.
Close it. Don't let him talk. Okay, now, the thing that gets me here, when he says a welcome like that is almost enough to make me want to run for office again, and then the audience went crazy. How do you go crazy over someone who is a murderer, who lies us into a war, who destroys the economy, who ships jobs overseas, who bankrupts the nation, and these dumb bastards cheer him? And you wonder why I call them dumb bastards? Now we have the CPAC Human Events. He's the editor of Human Events. If you've ever read that rag, it's just, oh my God, it is, oh, never mind. Anyway, Jed Babin, he introduces Grover Norquist, the, what can I say about Grover Norquist? He's the son of a bitch who made that famous statement. He hates America, and he's been out to destroy it since the Reagan years. He, remember when he said, quote, I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub, end quote. And what he means by that, of course, he wants to destroy. See, America is this social network, this social safety net. The fabric of our lives is all intertwined. And this pig bastard wants to destroy it. And they applaud him. You know, he wants to get rid of, like, the Food and Drug Administration, Education Department, National Endowment for the Arts, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unions. Oh, goddamn, kill the unions. I mean, this guy wants to destroy America. Some of you people wonder why I say Republicans and conservatives want to destroy America. You think that's a little over the top. No, it's not. What is America besides mountains and polluted rivers and putrid air? I mean, what is it? A collection of immigrants. A couple, three, four, 10 generations old. That's about it. And what is America? It's the way we attempt to govern ourselves and to take care of each other and to be, oh God, a family. But people like Grover Norquist, a rat bastard who like most right wingers doesn't have a clue how any of this works. Grover Norquist has spent the past 30 years destroying America. And I'll tell you what. He is damn proud of it. We're not going to play anything from this stupid son of a bitch, but here's the introduction.
Let me introduce my good friend, Grover Norquist. You know Grover, president of America's for Tax Reform, the most famous for having people sign the tax pledge. And, you know, there's a really good indication whether someone's a conservative or not. If they don't sign Grover's pledge, a little bit of a red flag. No, a real big red flag should wave. And let me just say, I'm really happy to see Grover today. He was getting a little testy in the past couple of weeks, and I was just really, really glad that it was not him identified as flying that airplane into the IRS building. Grover Norquist.
Oh, goddamn, that's funny. I'm glad it wasn't him. Two people dead, 12 in the hospital.
Well, it's always a delight.
Two people dead, 12 people in the hospital. It could have been scores dead. And this halfwit, the editor of Human Events, Jed Babin, introducing this vulture, this vampire, this man who likes to take credit for single-handedly trying to destroy America. And they joke about death and destruction. And you folks wonder why I say Republicans, conservatives are a different species. Come on. And then we have Jason Matera, the Young America Foundation, a leader who borrows a page from Ann Coulter's poison pen and calls liberal women ugly and accuses Obama of being a cokehead. And then he went on to make fun of the feminist new black man, a crossover between RuPaul and Barney Frank. This is the face of the young GOP.
Well, it's always a delight to participate in CPAC. This is like our Woodstock.
Yeah, it is.
Except, unlike the left's gathering, our women are beautiful. We speak in complete sentences. And our notion of freedom doesn't consist of snorting cocaine. Which is certainly one thing that separates us from Barack Obama. Actually, on the cocaine front, I do believe many young people in America viewed Barack in the same fashion as they do drugs.
Oh, yeah?
It was a substance to experiment with.
Yeah, and he's a Negro!
Heck, even the slutty Obama girl said her crush has faded. So the opening is certainly there for us, but it will be a challenge. Their version of diversity is bizarre. For instance, at the University of Michigan, students can take a class on Native American feminism. And maybe my all-time favorite, the class at Occidental College, which deconstructs what it means to be a feminist new black man. Now, if you're wondering, what just exactly is a feminist new black man? Think of a crossover between RuPaul and Barney Frank.
Well, I'll tell you what. I would like to meet Jason Matera. I'll get a couple of my dyke friends, a couple of my black friends, and my brand new friend, the Hopi Indian from out west, and four or five, six of us get together with Jason Matera and have a little sit down with him. That would be so much fun. I would represent his segment of the population because I'm a white male the way he is. And we could have the dykes and the Negroes and the Indians and me, the heterosexual white guy, and just take Jason Matera apart, screw by screw. Wouldn't that be fun? Hey, dykes, wouldn't that be fun? Yo, any black folk out there listening tonight? Hey, where's my Hopi Indian? Wouldn't that be fun? What a smarmy little son of a bitch. There's your Republican Ute. Wasn't that great, huh? The cocaine references and, oh yeah, diversity. They're teaching on a college level about Native American, what was it, feminism or Native feminist Americans or something? I get so close to just wanting to send these people an email and saying, look, pick a neutral spot and meet me there at such and such a time on such and such a day. Don't bring any weapons. Just bring your goddamn fists because that's all I'll bring. I can barely breathe sometimes from the absolute gut level stupidity and ugliness of these people. Well, this is your Republican Party.
state of the world that we
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Ten before the hour, after break at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Laura Flanders. You don't want to miss this. Stick around, all right? We're still at the CPAC convention. Steve King of Iowa presented the audience with a list of enemies they should beware of. He says something, they're liberals, they're Castroites, they're socialists, they're Gramsites. Gramsites? What is a Gramsite? Oh my God, it sounds like a microbiology class. I'll take obscure Marxist philosophers for $500, Alex. And then he went off on a riff about tainted healthcare stew with a Hillary soup bone. And, of course, nobody wanted a bowl full of that. These are crazy people, all of them.
Know thine enemy. Now, who are we up against? And I want to define that enemy. They are liberals. They are progressives. They are Che Guevarians. They are Castroites. They're socialists. More enemies on this list. Gramsciites, ring anybody's bell? Trotskyites, Maoists, Stalinists, Leninists, Marxists. They're all our enemies.
Yeah.
Who'd I leave out?
Your
I think
mama.
I heard that. And by the way, I don't want to meet with the President of the United States to see what other kind of toxic stew he's going to serve up to us. And it is a toxic stew. I mean, they started out with they were going to cook up this health care for America, so what do? They get a big pot out, and they decide, how do you start with cooking up this stew? So they reached into that 15-year-old shelf, and they pulled Hillary Care off of it, that big old tainted soup bone. They dropped it down in that pot and started to cook up this single-payer socialized medicine.
Jesus.
Then they found out that the flavor was tainted, so they threw a few more things in, thinking they could convince us we ought to eat that. And after all of these months of debate and negotiations, it comes down to this. If you start out with tainted stew, there is no part of it that Americans want. We don't want a pot full. We don't want a bowl full. We don't want a spoonful, a cup full, or any kind of measure of toxic stew called socialized medicine. We want it dead.
What? What?
I'm kind of afraid of Iowa all of a sudden.
Iowa?
Isn't he from Iowa?
Iowa produced something like that?
That's frightening.
Son of a bitch.
What, don't they have a lot of corn?
Play that one again. This is Steve King of Iowa. Listen to this. Listen to this.
Know thine enemy. Now, who are we up against? And I want to define that enemy. They are liberals. They are progressives. They are Che Guevarians. They are Castroites. They're socialists. More enemies on this list. Gramsciites. Ring anybody's bell? Trotskyites, Maoists, Stalinists, Leninists, Marxists. They're all our enemies. Who'd I leave out? I think I heard that. And by the way, I don't want to meet with the President of the United States to see what other kind of toxic stew he's going to serve up to us. And it is a toxic stew. I mean, they started out with they were going to cook up this health care for America, so what do? They get a big pot out and they decide, how do you start with cooking up this stew? So they reached into that 15-year-old shelf and they pulled Hillary Care off of it, that big old tainted soup bone. They dropped it down in that pot and started to cook up this single-payer socialized medicine. Then they found out that the flavor was tainted, so they threw a few more things in, thinking they could convince us we ought to eat that. And after all of these months of debate and negotiations, it comes down to this. If you start out with tainted stew, there is no part of it that Americans want. We don't want a pot full. We don't want a bowl full. We don't want a spoonful, a cup full, or any kind of measure of toxic stew called socialized medicine. We want it dead.
Do you get that? Do you understand what this insane person was talking about? What do you want? Hillary Clinton's soup bone? Jesus Christ. These people are not human. Granted, these are just a few excerpts, but this is what they're talking about. Do you hear anything that's positive for America? Do you hear a plan? Do you hear a solution? Do you hear even a direction except right into some sewer someplace where people are chewing on each other's legs? Do you hear anything here that's rational? Anything that's reasonable, just, ethical, moral, sensible? Or do you hear the mad ramblings of people who are high on their own spit? I mean, these people are. I don't know how to describe it. And when was it, Kathy? Was it 4 years ago when I got invited to speak at this? Remember that? And I wrote back to the person who invited me, and you liberally used the F word. Like, are you out of your effing mind? You think I would come to an F fest like this with your effing conservatives? Go F yourself. Get the F off my email, you effing freak. And then it turned out to be a woman. Remember that? And then she sent it to some little pissy blogger someplace, and the blogger, another woman who got it out all over the internet, right? The entire email that I sent, which I thought was wonderful! Wonderful. No, I wouldn't accept their invitation to speak there. Are you kidding me? Unless, no, I shouldn't say that. Never mind. All right. I think that's about, do we have any more sound from CPAC? Oh, yeah, we do. Well, we'll wait until after we chat with Laura Flanders, who will be with us momentarily. Do stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
When did your life start?
Seven past the hour on the Malloy program. Joining us from New York is Laura Flanders, who hosts a program called The F Word. Hi, Laura.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? Great to be back with you.
Yeah, no kidding. It's been a while. For anyone who doesn't know about Laura Flanders, go to lauraflanders.com. Suffice it to say, she's the host of Grit TV, a daily news discussion and take action program on Free Speech TV. Also, well, what I did, Laura, went to your website. Good God, it would take me half an hour to read everything.
Yeah, don't even bother.
Oh, don't even bother. Okay, she's also an author. She's a writer. She's a lecturer. And she's also absolutely gorgeous. Hey, this has been not just a hell of a week. This has been a weird year.
You're not kidding. It's been a weird few weeks, if you ask me.
What about, I'll tell you, there's one thing I want to talk to you about very quickly here. You know, Friday night is usually news dump night. Did you hear what the Justice Department, they've decided to only reprimand John Yoo and Jay Bybee? They found them, the Justice Department, the Obama Justice Department, found them guilty of poor judgment but not professional misconduct.
Yep.
case closed.
I heard somebody say that's kind of like saying Nuremberg was an exercise in poor judgment. You know, I mean, this is an unbelievable, basically an absolution of Bibi and you of how they behaved. And it is the exact opposite of the message that Barack Obama brought into, you know, was elected on, in the sense that he said, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. And day one, he said, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. To then have his own Justice Department saying, it was just misconduct. Really, it is as if Nuremberg said, you know, it was just misconduct.
It's astonishing that Obama's mantra or meme is, it's a time for reflection, not retribution. What the hell does that mean?
Well, it's a total dodge, Mike, and you know, it's, we're not talking about lining people up against a wall and doing anything to them. We're talking about moving on, which is to say reimposing the rule of law. Actually, it's not about trying to exact revenge on anyone. How long have we been saying this? It is about trying to actually distance ourselves from the past and move forward. You can't deal with the past, or rather you can't move on by ignoring what you've done. And we can't send any kind of signal to the world that we have become wiser and better, et cetera, if we don't take some kind of an action.
To what do you attribute this inaction on the part of Obama, on the part of Pelosi before Obama, this refusal to in the very minimalist sense obey the Constitution?
Well,
what?
I mean, I think we've heard about the two-party structure long enough to understand that.
That's what it is, huh?
I think so. I think it's this kind of, we don't want to have trials taking us away, distracting us. They say it's about distracting us from the people's business. I think it's that they don't want really for our Constitution to be an active, living document that extracts a price from wrongdoers, because they fear it could, you know, sweep them up in that someday.
The Assistant Attorney General who commented on this late this afternoon, someone named Ronald Weich, I believe, W-E-I-C-H, said that the lawyers, quote, exercised poor judgment in connection with the drafting of the pertinent memos, end quote. A poor judgment.
Yeah.
No, poor judgment is when you put on the wrong tie with the wrong slacks if you're a male. Or this is not poor judgment. These are the guys who Bibi is now a federal judge, and you is a tenured professor. I think he's tenured professor at Berkeley.
Yeah, he's out there teaching a whole other generation. I mean, I think it is shocking for an administration that came into office talking about accountability, among other things, and about responsibility and change and a new direction, for them to basically let these folks get away with murder or at least torture is simply shameful. And what I want to do is get John Conyers on the phone, hear the sound of his voice, because I cannot understand how he could have done this. Chair of the House Judiciary Committee, leading member of the Progressive Caucus. How he could have done this and used that legally flawed message is beyond me. And then for him to follow up by saying, well, we'll have hearings. I don't want hearings. We've had hearings.
Really?
I've heard. We've all heard enough.
Well, I think you're right in using the term murder. I think Bibi and Yu's rulings or memoranda that provided the cover for what was being done in the Bush administration. Even the New York Times reported on the deaths of at least two people who were tortured at Bagram several years ago, and the hangings, the alleged suicides in Guantanamo, serial suicides, and which one of the people involved in this on the American who said this was a form of what's the term of not unequal warfare, but when you use tactics that are different from standard warfare, that these guys committed suicide as a way of fighting the United States. This was the rationale.
And I don't know whether you've been listening, but the National Public Radio has actually done an investigation over the last few days where they've gone to London, sent a reporter to investigate the radicalization of the Nigerian who stands accused of trying to, you know, set off a bomb well, let's just call him the underpants bomber.
Right, right.
So you go, the people they've talked to include one former Guantanamo detainee who, you know, it is very clear that it was the experience that he talked about in Guantanamo that was part of what infuriated this young man and other young men.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just a matter of ancient history. This is a matter of, I consider it a threat to our lives that
sure.
these people are going on without any accountability, without any legal prosecution. I mean, this is exact. I mean, I'm so stunned, really, and I know that I shouldn't be. Maybe I'm stunned by my own ability still to be stunned. That Barack Obama does one thing and says another.
Mm-hmm.
It was this summer he said there was going to be accountability. There's going to be an investigation. For that investigation to result in this is classic Obama. Say one thing, do another, hope that nobody follows the thread. And to release this report last thing on a Friday, that's classic Nixon behavior.
Sure, sure. The disappointment, I think, that a lot of people who would identify themselves as progressives, I think that, and I'm in that group, the disappointment, at least in my case, is absolutely my own responsibility. Obama, you're right. Obama did say certain things that now have clearly shown that themselves to be lies. On the other hand, so much of what he said was in open to interpretation, and those of us who interpreted the things he said or didn't say to mean something, and then to find out that it didn't mean that at all. If one goes back and looks at the record of what he said during the campaign, there really is not that much that I can look at and say, well, he said this, but he's done that. He said he was going to continue the war in Afghanistan. He said he was. He also said there was going to be accountability, but issuing a reprimand is accountability, isn't it?
Well, maybe it is in his book. You know, one of the reasons I was enthused about the election of Barack Obama is that I thought it would be a shot in the arm for all of those who had mobilized around this country behind a long-shot candidate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what excited me, and this is, you know, where my appetite for just beating up on Obama is limited in the sense that what was exciting to me about this candidacy was the candidacy and the campaign around it,
right.
Which was about, I believe, greater chance than the Clinton campaign of sowing some grassroots, some new grassroots, reseeding the grassroots with new technology, new know-how, new email lists, new appetite, a victory under their belt. I'm disappointed in Obama, sure, but he's a Democrat running for president. You know, who are we kidding?
Yeah.
What I'm more disappointed about is us, that we in the last year have so hugely, I'm afraid, failed to stand up and demand
accountability.
Not just accountability, but demand what we voted for. Demand payback for all the work we put in to getting this guy elected.
That's true. Hold on a second, Laura, will you?
Yeah.
Let me do some commercials. We'll be right back. We're talking with Laura Flanders. Go to lauraflanders.com and say hi.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. We're talking with Laura Flanders. If you have been a good listener, you went to lauraflanders.com during the break. And found out where you can hear much, much more of Laura, where you can read what she has written, whether it is a book or pieces that she writes for various publications. Asymmetrical warfare was the term I was trying to grab hold of, Laura. When someone commits suicide because we are holding them, or our government holds them in prison and tortures them, that is called asymmetrical warfare. They are striking back at the United States. The mind stumbles about who came up with the term asymmetrical warfare and applied it to people who commit suicide.
Yeah. I mean, torture and war, these have been the underpinnings of al-Qaeda recruitment for how long? There is only one stop for it, and that is justice and accountability and responsibility, you name it. This is going to be Obama's problem. It has been Bush's problem. Now I'm afraid it is Obama's problem. The truth will out. The truth is out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there will sadly be a price to pay. I just want to say one thing. I've got a few emails from folks since the break. Greg from Marin says, hi, Mike. But I wanted to make a little amendment to the email and the website. We're transitioning our website. We've been at grittv.org, which is over there on the Fire Dog Lake site. We are right now, as we speak, it's a very exciting moment, trying out a new beta website, which is lauraflanders.com/grittv. It's like grassroots interactive television. It's like the grit that makes the pearl.
Oh, my God.
Grit TV. Go check it out. You'll see our beta site there. I'd love to hear from people what they think about it. And you can write to me, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at grittv.org. Go for it.
All right. It's lauraflanders.com/grittv.
Yeah, and you get all the Twitter information you could possibly want.
All right. That sounds good. You know, I know that you, one of your fortes or strong suits is writing about certain political figures, female political figures. And I got to ask you about the new president of Costa Rica, Chinchilla, oddly. I don't know why I consider that to be odd, but it is. That's her name. She is a career politician. But Oscar Arias, apparently, this was his hand-picked successor. But I was reading something the other day from Reuters, and here's what it says. Chinchilla is a social conservative, opposing gay marriage, opposing abortion, and opposing any change to Roman Catholicism's position as the state religion. Supporters regaled her with rosaries during her campaign, including one she wears constantly for good luck. I had no idea. I thought Costa Rica was a little more progressive than that, but maybe that's because they don't live there. Do you know about this woman?
No, I don't know much about her at all, but I don't think having Catholicism as a state religion and mandates that you're going to be anti any of those things, choice, gay marriage. I mean, you know, you've got countries like Italy and Spain dealing with gay marriage and choice. You've got Nicaragua for a long time it was legal. And I think people often take this as a dodge that, oh, well, it's a socially conservative country. We've all heard of liberation theology. That in and of itself doesn't dictate one line of social policy or another. Unfortunately, you know, the Costa Rica victory was a landslide and shocking for a part of the world that has been moving so steadily in the other direction. I don't know enough about it, but I do know that Costa Rica has been a very important focal point for U.S. influence in the region, going back to those Central American wars. You know that the Hondurans were sort of, you know, rejected, you know, were abandoned entirely when there was a coup in their country against their progressive president.
Right.
It makes you wonder what U.S. policy is doing in the region, backing in the region. Who's paying attention to Central America these days? Almost no one. We hear it's a woman. We think, oh, that's progress. Probably not so.
Well, the other thing, too, and I don't want to press it too much because this is America. This is the United States. So I should say nobody really gives a damn about Costa Rica. But they have had state-controlled electricity and telecommunications sectors in their economy. And apparently the new president is pushing this neoliberalism economic policy, which is privatization of everything. And especially in Central and South America, in Latin America, neoliberalism has been the downfall of, or if not the downfall, the instrument that was used to bludgeon the people and to keep them in perpetual slavery to U.S. corporations. I don't mean to sound too much like a raving socialist here, but I always thought Costa Rica was so progressive. They have no military, no army, no standing army. Arias is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Granted, it's a transshipment point for an awful lot of drugs, but on the other hand, I just found it kind of odd that Costa Rica would start going down this neoliberalism path, which I think most governments in Central and South America have said enough. Can you stick around just a little bit longer? All right.
Yeah.
Let me do some more commercials. We'll come right back. Thanks, Laura. We're talking with Laura Flanders. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Laura Flanders. Go to our website and you can find out where you can hear as much of Laura Flanders as you could possibly enjoy, and that would be a lot, and where you can read about where you can read the things that she writes for various publications. The CPAC convention it's spring. Spring is right around the corner because these crazy people come home like the swallows coming back to San Juan Capistrano. These crazy right-wingers cluster around the CPAC convention. What do you make of this year? We played some sound from it earlier in the program, Laura, and they all sound just so happy, inane, but happy as they talk about Obama and cocaine, or they talk about how much they enjoy torture. What the hell is this?
Well, I don't even know where to begin, and I'm so glad you're talking about it, in the sense that the double standard and how these people are treated in our media versus how any equivalent group on the left-hand side would be treated.
Oh, my God.
Well, talking about picking up a 9-iron and smashing the window of federal government, then making jokes, Scott Brown making jokes on Fox News today about that guy, Joe Stack, who, as far as I'm concerned, is a domestic terrorist, but everyone else just refers to him as a pilot of the crashed plane.
Right.
I mean, for heaven's sake, just because the guy owns his own plane, that he crashes it into a building because he's upset at government, it's just a suicidal crash, and it can be the stuff of laughter from, you know, elected officials of that Republican Party. I mean, this stuff is so, on the one hand, outrageous, on the other hand, scary, and on, you know, all hands, hypocritical. Because if you remember, I mean, I was struck today, I was tweeting, and if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can, Grit Laura on Twitter. I was commenting today when I saw that these patriot groups, teabaggers, you name it, all sorts of people have set up fan pages on Facebook for Joe Stack, the domestic terrorist in Atlanta, in Austin. And I thought, you know, they're calling him, you know, a hero. Do you remember what happened to Susan Sontag when she, even just for one second, in a tiny throwaway line in a little piece in the New Yorker magazine, said that maybe the bombers of 9/11 weren't cowards?
Oh, Bill Maher lost his program on ABC television for saying essentially the same thing.
Now it's acceptable to talk about smashing the window of big government, and Scott Brown saying he felt like this anger that was, you know, the anger that got him elected was the same anger that got that guy flying into a building. I mean, I think this is, as I said, dangerous, but it's truly infuriating, too.
You know, in the current issue, and perhaps you've seen the current issue of Mother Jones with the active duty soldier on the cover. He is not deployed because he has he damaged his knees, I believe, but they've kept him stateside. And he has gone public about the involvement of an awful lot of active military people in the so-called Patriot Teabagger, this whole cadre of crazy people, the militias. Patriot being another word that the right is totally corrupted. And when I read this, this article in Mother Jones, my copy just came the other day, and when I read it, I just thought, my God, you know, this is, we make jokes about, I make jokes about being an armed liberal with a carry permit, but it's not a joke. It really isn't.
No, well, that's very interesting. I'm gonna go read that article. I mean, we have a climate of, hatred out there that is growing and building in a very dangerous way.
And you know what? You know what it is. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's no doubt about this. Because Barack Obama is not white.
Well, I mean, there's no question. If you look at the lineup there at the Tea Party conventions, what's the one uniting characteristic? You have to say race.
Sure.
I think Keith Olbermann's been asking the right question.
Yeah, I think so too. let me ask you. I got an email here from a guy who wants to know, who do you see as the next best hope? You know, we talked the other night about the idea of, and I forget whose idea this was, mounting a challenge against Obama in the presidential primary challenge in 2012. From the liberal left, and names came up like Bernie Sanders, Howard Dean, Dennis Kucinich. Somebody even said Oprah. But who do you see as a possible challenge from the left that might get Barack Obama's attention? I frankly think it's a good idea. They did it to Lyndon Johnson, and he more or less resigned. He didn't resign from the presidency, but he resigned from seeking another term.
Well, you know, that's a tough question. Immediately I thought, well, we need somebody who would really rally people and speak to this fake populism. Let's have Willie Nelson run. You know, and then I thought, you know, we should have someone who's really clear on these constitutional questions. Let's have Glenn Greenwald run, but he's probably too much of a wonk. I mean, we need people who will both mobilize people around their election, but more importantly, mobilize people in this country around their democracy. I mean, frankly, I'm not sure it's one single leader. Our media teach us to think of politics as who is our next leader, and then we elect them and we sit back and judge them. You know, it's not how a democracy is supposed to work.
Right.
And do we need one great new leader? I think we need lots of great new leaders. I interviewed Kathleen Hanna from Bikini Kill and La Tigre on my show this week at GreenTV.org, and you can see the video there. And we have great footage of her in sort of underground basement concerts from the early 90s. And she said, you know, we have a habit of building up leaders and then destroying them instead of figuring out new models of leadership that people would find less threatening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not one leader that we're feeling somewhat happy about and somewhat resentful of, but rather we need to celebrate the leaders in our communities. I spoke to a woman yesterday on the stage at the Lenzik Theater in Santa Fe, Maud Barlow, unbelievable Canadian organizer around issues of water. And when you talked about Central America for a minute, I was reminded of, you know, what she described of essentially the revolutions against neoliberalism and big corporations that have happened in Bolivia and Paraguay when the Bolivians were faced with the privatization of their water system by our beloved Bechtel. I can't even build a subway system in Boston, but they are, you know, given contracts in Iraq and Afghanistan and Central America, they were going to privatize the water of Bolivia so that even if you caught water in a tank on your roof, you'd have to pay back Bechtel tax.
Sure.
You know, the local people just rebelled, forced them out of that country, and then went on to elect a leader who represented that movement.
Mm-hmm.
The movement came first. So, you know, I just think we need to think that way, because otherwise we're always setting up some woman or some man to fail. What we need is to figure out how come in this year of crisis on the housing front, the environment front, the banking front, the jobs front, healthcare, we have been basically as a people silent.
That's
amp
right.
up the war in Afghanistan, no anti-war march. Abandon the public option, let alone single payer, lock it out of the hearings. No national demonstration. How come?
Well, that raises the issue. Do you think that the system that we have played with for over 200 years now is essentially has just become infect, it's dead. It's a rigor mortis. When we talk about, I've said on this program before that unless the demonstrations involved people in the seven figures, millions of people, there's no point in getting 100,000 folks together to demonstrate in D.C. anymore because nobody pays any attention. But if you look at these different countries where a stolen election or an increase in the price of gasoline, whatever, the French will bring the whole country to a stop. There are places in Asia that make everything just come to a grinding halt. Central America or South America, we have lost the ability apparently to do that, which raises the issue for me, is our system of representative democracy dead? And it's a fair question.
Well, we had a discussion on our show a few days ago, I think it was, with Rick Hertzberg from The New Yorker and Lawrence Lessig about just, to, you know, doing away with, A, the filibuster, and then it became, B, doing away with the Senate, you know? I mean, people are really looking at a system, and right now it just is enough to make you want to scream. You've got the White House saying, we would support a healthcare proposal, healthcare reform with a public option in it if it got to our desk. And then you've got Harry Reid saying, well, I'd support it, and this was the big news today. He said he would support it if it was the proposal, you know, if it was the White House bill. It's like, what do you mean if? You know, you're the guy in charge of corralling the White House. What's with this? You know, if this happens, then will that? Everyone's waiting, you know, we've got the party of no and the party of after you. You know, no one wants to take leadership. But, you know, I think that we have got to remember what Howard Zinn, much missed historian, people's history of the United States, what he would say is, you know, if you wait around for the demonstration to be big enough before you'll join it, you're waiting around for history to pass you by. Like, history has been made by people starting small, getting involved where they live, even if it is small. You know, I don't agree that demonstrations don't make any difference. Do they change policy tomorrow? Maybe not, but they do change us. We feel like we're not alone, that there are people that feel the way we do. They give us some sense of strength. Should we always have demonstrations in Washington? No, it's expensive. It's bad for the carbon footprint. But how about a few more demonstrations outside our hospitals, a few more demonstrations outside our welfare offices?
Good points. Absolutely. Absolutely good points. Laura, I'd like to talk with you forever, but we got a boogie. Thanks so much for taking time tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We've got to get you to come on Grit TV sometime soon.
I'll do it. Just let me know. Send us an email. All right. Take care and good luck. All right?
Thanks to both of you.
Okay.
Ciao.
All right, Laura. Bye-bye. All right. We'll be back after the break. Go to lauraflanders.com for all the information you could possibly want. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, well, he's out tonight, and I'm here. No humble, no obedient. All right, back to the CPAC, a circle jerk that's going on in Washington, D.C. once again. We've got a couple of more sound bites that you've got to hear in the few minutes we have left in the segment. This is the one where, you know, a day after the suicide bomber strikes an IRS building after writing his anti-government manifesto, Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, what the hell has happened to this guy? Whew. He takes up the theme of violence against the state. He says that the most important event going on in America on Friday is Tiger Woods' impending press conference. That's what he said this morning. He said, quote, we can learn a lot from that situation, not from Tiger, but from his wife. He says, I think we should take a page out of her playbook. It's unbelievable. Here is a formerly sane governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty.
The comeback for conservatives in this country was a surprise or unexpected to just about everyone. except us. Except us. We knew that when freedom is attacked, when our freedoms, our principles, and our values are attacked, a powerful movement will rise up and fight back. And that's what happened. And I thank you for it. Now, at this very hour, or very shortly this morning, a big event is happening in the United States of America. Tiger Woods is holding his press conference at 11 o'clock Eastern. Now, I think we can learn a lot from that situation. Not from Tiger, but from his wife. So she said, I've had enough. She said, no more. I think we should take a page out of her playbook and take a 9-iron and smash the window out of a big government in this country.
This is what Laura was talking about a few minutes ago. Can you imagine Dennis Kucinich saying something like that and watching this right-wing media just going nuts? I mean, Tim Pawlenty, not that I give a damn about Tim Pawlenty, but he was at one time considered to be a moderate Republican. Well, I guess you got to play to the crowd that is paying your bills, right? Michelle Bachmann today tried to cover her inherent crazy with a lesson on the Declaration of Independence, which she feels Obama's thought and speech police are threatening. Bachmann discussed her interpretations of life and liberty and took a unique perspective on the pursuit of happiness. Pursuit of happiness means you and I have a right to our labor. We have the rights to the fruits of our labor. What? Tom Jones played softly in the background as she finished.
Liberty. Liberty is the right. It's the right to be free in our conscience, in our mind, free in our decision-making, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, this is the fun, inalienable right, the pursuit of happiness. This requires, however, according to the founders, economic liberty. Pursuit of happiness meant you and I have a right to our labor. We have a right to the fruits of our labor. Now, what does that tell you about the Obama thought police, the Obama speech police? That is not what the founders intended. Let us act with great courage, with that spirit of sacrifice, that spirit of nobility, as Joseph Warren said.
She's a cutter.
Act worthy of yourselves.
She's a cutter. She's a cutter. She is. No offense to poor, emotionally disturbed teenagers who slice themselves with the sharps. But Michelle Michelle Bachmann is not a teenager. She's an insane woman. What the hell did she just say? She always wants to inflict some kind of damage on her physical body.
Well, and invite others to, what was it famously, slit their wrists.
Slit their wrists.
In a blood oath.
She's a goddamn cutter.
Stop Obamacare.
This is madness. Well, yeah, but, you know.
She probably keeps a little box of tiny Band-Aids in her purse.
Or big ones. All right, we have one more, and I want to wait until after the break, because this is Bob Barr. And he used to be one of the He was a federal attorney here, federal prosecutor for the North Georgia District back years ago before he ran for the U.S. House. Every once in a while, his and my paths would cross here in Georgia, here in the Atlanta area. And I've had some conversations with him that were sometimes very sane and well thought out. Other times I felt like I was talking to someone who just arrived here from some other dimension. Barr is a hard one to figure out. He's very libertarian in some of his points of view. I don't think he's a crazy Republican unless the terms are forever linked. I don't know what Barr is anymore. I really don't. But I never cared for him as a member of the House. He was one of the impeachment managers against Clinton, one of the House managers with this impeachment fiasco. And being a former federal prosecutor, he should have known better. He knew damn good and well that the attempt to or the indictment of Bill Clinton would never fly when it got to the Senate, that it was only being done by the House Republicans to further destroy the political system in this country. And that only because Clinton was so effective at being a Republican. So Barr, I don't know. I don't like him. But I want you to hear how this group of crazy people reacted to some of the things that Barr said. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. All right. The setup here for this last bit of sound from the crazy people gathering in Washington, this insane collection of real America haters. These are people who despise the country, and that's not a gratuitous statement. The United States of America has been carefully put together over 200 years. We've attempted to right the wrongs that the framers wrote into the Constitution, except where it concerns the people from whom we stole the nation to begin with. That will never be righted. But as far as the rest of it, an effort was made. And over the course of that 200 years, we've tried to assemble, for example, a social safety net, a societal safety net that was an indication, on the one hand, that the Christers could be right, that maybe this is a Christian nation, because Christian charity, taking care of your brother, doing all those, or your sister, doing all those things that Jesus talked about. So if the Christers were really serious, then they would not be trying to undo the very things that their Lord and Savior told them to do. You are your brother's keeper. What you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. On and on and on. I mean, the Bible is chock-a-block with examples of Jesus being a socialist of the highest order. He hated personal wealth. That's why he didn't have any. That's why his disciples didn't. So the Christers in this country are goddamn liars and hypocrites. They hate Jesus. They would stomp him into the ground if they could. And they stomp him into the ground every single day. But I digress. If there's one thing the CPAC convention shows is the depth of the craziness. The absolute depth of the craziness. After 200 years of struggling to get it right, after a liberal Democrat, Franklin Roosevelt, whom the people of the United States elected once and reelected three times until the Republicans got hip to that and said, well, let's put term limits. A liberal Democrat who, in spite of his flaws, wove together protection for the American people. We're concerned their bank deposits. We're concerned their jobs. We're concerned their liberty. Because what is liberty? You know, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose, as Janis Joplin said. You can be as free as the wind. And when you need medical care, you can't get it. When you need a house, you can't get it. When you'd like to have a car, you can't get it. When you need education, you can't get it. That's freedom, goddammit. Freedom is having nothing left to lose. When your kids are hungry, you can't feed them. Be free! A liberty is something different. Liberty means having the freedom of spirit that comes from having a decent job, from having a decent income, from not being homeless, from knowing that your kids will be better off than you are. From all that, that's what liberty's about. Liberty of the liberation of the soul, the spirit, the mind. So you right-wingers can kiss my ass. None of you are about freedom or liberty. You're about slavery. You're about totalitarianism. You're a bunch of goddamn cowards, every single one of you, with your patriot this and your guns that and your bullets this. Seriously, you're just nuts. You're wacko. So here these people are, and I would be willing to bet that a good 90% of them, maybe more, get some sort of government assistance that they would absolutely refuse to give up. Now, 100% of them get benefits of the social safety net if it's just driving on an interstate. But I bet you 90% of them get actual cash or in-kind payments for something. But there they sit. A bunch of cowardly, lard-ass, middle-aged people, and this youth, these GOP youth, the Hitler Corps, a youth corps. Oh my God, where do these people come from? Now, just to show how insane, how truly insane they are, Bob Barr speaks out against waterboarding and these pro-torture, anti-life, racist, anti-science, fear-mongering mini-minds. Boo him. They're against everything that America is supposed to stand for. They have utterly and absolutely destroyed the country. What a sad, scary bunch of misfits they really are.
The idea that you would try them as civilians and it would be clear in a civilian court and you would declare them to be engaged in criminal enterprise, doesn't that also present obstacles for our national security? That's what we're talking about here, because they do have various rights. If I was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's lawyer, the first thing I would be saying is, hey, look, speedy trial. I've been sitting in Guantanamo Bay an awful long time. And all those admissions I made, all those statements I made about I'm glad I did it, not admissible. Congressman Barr, you also served as U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Georgia. Your view on this issue of the civilian versus enemy combatant situation, how would you go about it?
Well, back in 1996, when I served in the Congress, we passed a law called the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. And part of the purpose, the primary purpose of passing that law, which was in fact signed into law and is currently the law of this land, was to address situations that we believed could very well crop up in which you would have somebody commit an act of terrorism defined in the statute in U.S. territory or on a U.S. Air carrier over U.S. territory. Now, either we believe as lawyers, as lawmakers, and as citizens that there is value in laws, that laws that are passed have meaning and have a purpose, or we don't. If we go around saying, well, we passed this law to address specifically the activity let's call him what he is, an idiot, on that airline flying into Detroit on Christmas Day, what he tried to do. If we pass a law that is designed to expressly provide penalties and a procedure for bringing him to justice and hopefully securing, if not the death penalty, as the law can provide for, or a life sentence without the possibility of parole, then use the law. But I don't think that we should go down the path of allowing our leaders to have their cake and eat it too. There is nothing magical about a military tribunal. They don't have necessarily better lawyers than in the civilian sector. I think I have a lot more faith in our U.S. attorneys who are non-political than my colleagues on the other side of this debate do. We can try them. We should try them. That is precisely, Jay, what our law provides for. And when the first time we're faced with a situation, we say, we want to have them go to the military, let them torture them for a while. It's not enhanced interrogation techniques. waterboarding is torture. How would you know to be waterboarded? Try that.
Isn't that nice? And why were they booing Bob Barr? Because he was making salient points that these cretins could no more understand than they can understand that Sarah Palin is dancing on their foreheads. If we have laws, why not abide by them? Well, I guess Nancy Pelosi was a teabagger because she decided that the law of the land, the U.S. Constitution, would be spat upon where it concerned the two war criminals that ran this country for 8 years. But there's old Bob Barr making the case for following the law. There's old Bob Barr. You know, what's the point of turning over to military tribunal? Try him the way, you know, come on. Just like they tried how many terrorists during the Bush Cheney reign of terror? There's Bob Barr making the case for law, order, and constitutional justice or statutory justice. And they boo him. And when Bob Barr says water's wet, you know, waterboarding is torture, these ignorant sons of bitches boo him again. I'll tell you what, you right-wingers, you're a bunch of goddamn maniacs. You're all insane.
It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. After the next break, we're going to do podcast trivia. Give away a 1-year gift subscription to Malloy Podcast Downloads. So get your dialing finger ready. Chris Floyd has reacted as you did and as I did to the... to the fact that there will be no penalties whatsoever for the lawyers who were ordered by Bush and Cheney to write memos justifying torture that Bush and Cheney wanted to unleash on people held indefinitely without charges, without evidence, without trial, and without rights. In addition to all that, as Chris Floyd writes, Dick Cheney has openly confessed to instructing his pathetic little minions, his nasty little modern-day Vyshinskys, John Yoo and Jay Bybee, to write the scraps of paper of twisted legalese meant to preemptively exonerate the top officials of the United States government for the unambiguously criminal actions they were to inflict upon their uncharged, untried prisoners, some of whom had actually been purchased like slaves from traffickers in human bodies around the world. Cheney now boasts openly of supporting and facilitating torture techniques like waterboarding, which have historically been prosecuted as high crimes by American authorities and are, in fact, capital crimes under the laws of the United States today. But on Friday, today, the administration of President Barack Obama declared that not only will it not prosecute the avowed and boastful perpetrators and accomplices of the capital crime of torture, it will not even impose the mildest of administrative or professional reprimands upon them. For the foulest tortures, reaching even to murder, the government of the United States will do nothing. No investigation, no prosecution, no penalty. I've run out of words to describe how vile this is. The mind recoils against fully comprehending the moral depravity of our leaders and the reeking stench of their pious hypocrisy. quote, the king is in this world without law and may at his own lust do right and wrong and shall give a comptus, an accounting, but to God only, end quote. Thus, William Tyndale, in his work in 1528, Obedience of a Christian Man, helped usher in the doctrine of the divine right of kings, overthrowing centuries of political, religious, and philosophical thought and practice, which had insisted that rulers still were fully subject to the law. In support of the latter, A.D. Nuttall, who wrote this, now points out, he quotes Richard Hooker, no radical, but a profoundly traditional churchman, quote, where the law doth give dominion, who doubteth that the king who receiveth it is under the law? End quote. But in our degenerate day, Hooker's reasonable formulation has been waterboarded into oblivion, and we are back to Tyndale's cringing doctrine. Our bipartisan kings are indeed without law, no penalty, no punishment for these vile malefactors, these barbaric abusers, and corruptors of our children. Chris Floyd. You can go to his website, chris-floyd.com. And wouldn't you know, they would dump this on Friday night. Of course. Of course. And I wonder if the talking geeks on Sunday television will talk about this and the mild manner in which they will. Well, time to move forward, not to look back. Liz Cheney, Dick Cheney, the rest of these creepy sons of bitches, they love torture. It's very Christian. It's very proper. It's very freedom-loving. Well, I agree with Chris Floyd that this incredibly criminal activity, this unbelievable criminal activity, is a lesson that the U.S. government, the government of Barack Obama, taught the children of America today. Quote, children, the law is nothing but a rag smeared with blood and excrement. The law is only for suckers, rubes, and losers. Claw your way to the top by any means necessary, and the law can never touch you. This is the American way. For torture, reaching even to murder, the government of the United States will do nothing. No investigation, no prosecution, no penalty. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. About 25 before the hour. Podcast trivia time. You ready to do this? Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for podcast trivia on the Malloy program, where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show free download thingies. Carl is in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Carl.
Hello, nice to speak to you again.
My pleasure. Are you ready to do this?
Absolutely.
Are you nervous? Your palm sweaty? Your heart rate up?
We spoke about a month ago. I said I think I'd be in good shape.
Okay. All right, here we go. What former New York City top cop and pal of Rudy Giuliani was recently sent to prison for...
I'll let it go. I know the answer. I'll let it go.
Yeah, who is it?
Bernie Kerik. Ugh. Too easy, man. I'm a former New Yorker.
Oh, all right. Well, then, that was easy enough, wasn't it?
Okay. Let the listeners have some fun. What were the choices?
The choices were Bernie Kerik, Michael Chertoff, Irving Scooter, Libby, and Howard Safer.
Only two of which are bald, right?
Yeah, okay. That's true. All right, Carl, way to go. All right, I'm going to put you on hold. And Kathy,
bless you, young man.
Kathy will get the pertinent information. Enjoy, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, man. Thanks a lot for playing. That was easy. That was easy. My goodness. All right, well, I guess we're just going to have to get tougher questions, that's all. Don't you think? There's another tell-all book, and it's written by someone named Ronald Asmus, and it's entitled A Little War That Shook the World. It's talking about when Russia invaded the Georgian Republic 2 years ago in 2008. And, of course, the Georgian Republic is one of our – it was at the time, I think it's changed now, but it was one of our little puppet states right up against the old Soviet Union, right up against Russia. Georgia's leader, Mikhail Saakashvili, was seen as an ally of the Bush crime family and had pushed for NATO membership for his country, right? The invasion by Russia was provoked by the Georgians. I think that's a fact, because in my opinion, I don't know what the book says because I haven't read it, but in my opinion, the Bush State Department pushed for this action by the Georgian government in order to provoke Putin. Well, now it turns out that Dick Cheney was pushing for a military conflict with Russia. Cheney was looking at the possibility of forcing us, the United States, into military action to prevent the Georgian forces from being routed by the Russian troops as they were. In the book, Asmus wrote, quote, the sheer scale of the Russian attack did lead several senior White House staffers to push for at least some consideration of military options to stem the Russian advance. The menu of options under discussion foresaw the possibility of bombardment as well as surgical strikes to reduce Russian military pressure on the Georgian government. End quote. And the author, Ronald Asmus, paints a scenario in which Cheney appears to be the most vocal proponent of the idea of getting involved with fighting the Russians, even as other members of the administration, including the National Security Advisor and Bush, said no. Cheney's a goddamn psychopath. Always has been, always will be. This crazy bastard wants death and destruction on a huge, grand scale. So does his unbalanced daughter. I don't know what the hell is wrong with these two. But Dick Cheney, constantly pushing for war and death and destruction and murder and mayhem and torture and blood and gore. Not Al Gore either. Asmus writes that there was disagreement about this between Bush's National Security Advisor, no dove himself, Stephen Hadley, and Cheney. Hadley, quote, thought Russia was focused only on Georgia, end quote, while, quote, Cheney had a different and harder-edged view of Moscow's goals. Both Hadley's and Cheney's staffs had also raised the question of considering limited military options, end quote. In other words, Cheney was willing to push us into World War III. Cheney was willing to push the entire planet into a thermonuclear war. Dick Cheney is a monster, an out-of-control psychopath, who is still registering his opinions where it concerns what the United States is doing. He's entitled to do that, but he ought to be doing it from a prison cell or on the gallows right before the trap door underneath his feet springs and he can screech whatever he wants to. But this son of a bitch is a war criminal. And the terrible part, he'll never, ever be brought to justice. Never. And if the defense for Bybee and you, the two that were exonerated of any criminal activity tonight, Irish Dave says, if you and Bybee were only following orders, which was the Nuremberg defense that we said no to, what does one call Big Dick's defense of, I was only issuing orders? I mean, this is madness. It's just total craziness. The book indicates that Bush was told of the suggestion that the U.S. should interfere militarily in Georgia and rejected it. Ronald Asmus writes, quote, at a meeting of the Principals Committee on Monday, August 11, 2008, Hadley put the military option on the table to see whether there was any support for such steps to help the Georgians repel the Russians. There was not. He goes on, there was a clear sense around the table that almost any military steps could lead to a confrontation with Moscow, the outcome of which no one could predict. Cheney wanted a war with Russia. Cheney, a guy who had 6 deferments to stay out of military service, who said he had better things to do in the 60s than go fight some goddamn war in Southeast Asia. But this psychopathic bastard who was cheered so loudly and so raucously at this collection of maniacs at GOPAC in Washington yesterday, this crazy bastard tried to push Bush into a military confrontation with the Russians. And once that begins, what are the chances of it stopping? 50-50? 70-30? 60-40? 80-20? Well, what are the chances? Cheney could scoop up his family and head for the bunker. What happens to the rest of us? What happens to the soldiers that Cheney wanted to send over there for the confrontation? You miserable bastard. You miserable, filthy, filthy old man. You ought to do the world a favor and just move on. Move on. Move on. You're not wanted here. Not by rational people. Move on. Go meet your maker. Move on, Dick. Haven't you done enough damage? And now you want that? You want a full-blown war between the United States and Russia? You don't give a goddamn, do you, Dick? You just want war. You want murder and mayhem and blood. You want people dying and falling down in bombs so that when the time comes for you to go, and it must be pretty close, right, huh? What have your doctors been telling you? Can't keep drinking baby's blood. Eventually, you're going to lose that little rosy tinge to your cheeks. What do your doctors keep telling you? You don't have a lot of time left, so any murder and destruction and mega death that you've got on your agenda, you better get it done. Right, Dick? What a sick, sick, disgusting man. Well, okay, not man. God. It's astonishing. He wanted war with the Russians. And even chuckle nuts understood that that was, no, my dad wouldn't like it. No, my dad wouldn't like it. I can't do that. My dad wouldn't like it, Dick. Don't, Dick. Don't keep pushing me. My dad won't let me do it. I don't want to do it, Dick. You little son of a bitch. I'm telling you to go ahead and attack. Go ahead. Send the truth. No, my dad won't let me. Thanks to Sharon Gordy, who is our military affairs correspondent, for the reporting this week. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs correspondent. Kate Petrini, education correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who kind of oversee the program. And our producer and engineer, Kathy Bay. Marilyn is in Berkeley, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Marilyn.
Hey, hi. You really set the note for the whole country. You are the true voice of America. You might not believe that.
Please.
But you, Miss, my friend, you are expressing things that millions of people want to express. So thank you for that. Anyway, I wanted to talk about what makes a people's hero. Because I remember the guy that went and told Dick Cheney, F you, Mr. Cheney, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
The little nerdy guy, sweetheart. And he was my hero for the year because he had the courage to get up in Dick Cheney's face. That was nice. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the tax suicide guy. I'm sorry. I hate to say this. I'm sorry if any innocent lives were lost, but the tax suicide guy, he's my hero because what it is when you run into one of these hidebound bureaucracies, and they are just simply not going to budge. They're going to be as evil as they want to against you. Then the ones who have the courage to make the point directly to that agency, directly to the bureaucracy. And this is what all these bureaucracies, of course, they do fear it because they do know.
Well, now, wait a second. Are you saying that you think what he did was a good thing?
Yes.
Oh, Marilyn, come on.
He had to.
No. This is an example. Do you think what Timothy McVeigh did was a good thing?
Well, when you say good thing, I don't think good.
Do you think what Timothy McVeigh did was necessary?
Well, I'm not sure what he did. What about that other guy?
He blew up 169 people or 168 people at the Murrah Federal Building because he didn't like the government. And that's what this guy did with the airplane. He tried to kill 200 people. And you think that's a good thing?
Yes.
Okay. Don't call the program again because I'm not real good with people who say stuff like that. Seriously, Marilyn, I don't want to hear from you again. Kathy, if she calls in again, don't put her on the air. That's goddamn craziness. And I don't do craziness. That's murder. If that's your hero, I don't want you anywhere near this program. No thanks. Mike's in Salt Lake City, listening on XM.
Yeah, how are you, Mike?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Oh, I'm hanging there. Mike, I just want to comment about that thing about the Kentucky legislator wanting to put King James Bibles back into Kentucky public schools.
And you know, they might not even be King James. They may be more rigid than King James. But
Right. Right. Well, I'll tell you what the whole core of it is this. Is back either in 1962 or 63 when Madeline Mary O'Hara won that famous U.S.
Right.
Supreme Court thing saying there is no more mandatory Bible reading or prayer in public school.
Right.
That made the Protestant Christian evangelicals just furious. And they'll do anything to sneak their way in the back door.
And you know what's so bad about that, Mike? Their own Savior, Jesus Christ himself, admonished people not to pray in public.
Yeah, he said in the Beatitudes, right?
Right, right. He said, if you want to talk to my Father who is in heaven, go into your closet and talk to him. And you know, to say that, as these right-wing crazy bastards have been saying now for 40 years, that the atheists drove prayer out of the public school is insane. There is no law against praying in school. Any kid who goes to school who wants to pray can do so.
Well, Mike, here's the central thing. Okay, the government is to stay out of the business of religion when you're on official government time, okay?
There you go.
Just teach the children, you know, the three R's, computers, whatever, and just stay the hell out of the business of religion. You can talk about God on your recess time, on off-school time, but when the school is officially in session, just do the job you're there for.
Well, religion, yeah, especially evangelical Christianity, is all of, and fundamental Islam, is all about mind control, and Catholicism, different branches of Christianity. It's about mind control. It's about, you know, get the little boogers when they can't even think straight and inculcate them with this crazy superstitious mythology of demons and devils and angels, and you're going to burn in hell or you're not, and screw them up for their entire lives to the point where they can't even face their own deaths in an honest way because they're not going to know whether or not they did it all right.
Yeah, well, Mike, here's something interesting, too, is Christians can't agree on how they pray. Fact, an average Protestant Christian evangelical would take offense praying to the Virgin Mary like a Roman Catholic would, right?
Right.
Then the Jehovah's Witnesses deny the doctrine of the Trinity.
Right.
So Christians among themselves can't agree how to pray.
Even
this whole prayer business agenda is a one-sided thing. What if we were, say, a Hindu prayer, a Buddhist prayer, a Bhagavad Gita prayer?
It's madness.
These Christian evangelicals would oppose it.
It's madness. It's madness, Mike.
It's religious arrogance is what it is, Mike.
Yeah, it is indeed. Thanks a lot, pal. We're flat out of time. I'm going to have to leave you. Thanks, Mike. Have a good weekend. Oy. In Kentucky. In Texas. There's an effort here in Georgia to do the same thing. You know, the buckle of the Bible Belt, where there are more rapes, more cases of incest, more murders, wife battering, and that's what it is here. That's what they call it here in the South. They don't call it spousal abuse. They call it wife battering. Right here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, where Jesus reigns supreme. I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are. Mwah!